You're listening to episode 1 of Hammercast, a weekly news and discussion show about the world of games, smashing buttons, clicking mice, shuffling cards, and rolling dice. Today, on Wednesday, January 28th, 2015, from the frosty innards of Massachusetts, I'm your host, Dwayne. And on the other end of Interstate 90, from me in beautiful Seattle, are our co-hosts, Todd and Joe. How's it going today, boys?
Hey, not too bad. I think we actually have a little bit of sun out there today. So, you know, it's kind of rare for Seattle in the winter.
Sun? What's that?
I don't know. I'll let you know in spring.
Yeah, I can see a little bit of blue in the sky today. So that's always a nice thing.
Well, actually, now that I look outside, the sky is very blue, but the ground is very white, which I'm guessing is not the case for you guys.
No.
If the ground gets white here, the city just roll it up and just call it closed for a week.
All right. Well, to start things off, we're going to go straight into talking about our story of the week. Each of us has picked a story from the gaming and tech world that's occurred over the last week, and we're going to bring it up and focus on it for a short amount of time as we go around the table here. Dreger, why don't we go ahead and start with you, since you're the most well-traveled of us right now?
Me? Wow, I was second on the list, but sure. So as some of you may or may not know, I am an enforcer for a show, a PC gaming show, well, I guess video and PC gaming show called PAX. Anyone who's not familiar with PAX should go to www.paxsite.com and read up on the most amazing, awesome video computer, tabletop, board game, everything gaming convention on the planet. There's four of them now. We do one in Boston, we do one in Seattle, we do one in Australia, and this year and last week we did our first one in San Antonio, Texas. And that was a pretty amazing show. You know, it was the first one down there, so it was a little small. I think we had around 30,000 tickets sold. All 3 days did sell out, including 3-day passes. You know, I work with the PC room. I'm one of the managers in that particular department. And, you know, we had 250 computers and 150 BYOC bring your own computer LAN party, which went really well. Gave away $2,500 in prizes, a bunch of Grey Goo codes, all sorts of fun stuff. So PAX South is probably the smallest one we've ever done. But, you know, there was some fun things to see there. Got to see Elite Dangerous. Elite, what the hell is it called?
Elite Dangerous, you had it.
Elite Dangerous, I had it. demoed on an Oculus Rift, which the game is being specifically designed around an Oculus Rift. And I hear it's absolutely amazing. So that's definitely on my radar. The other thing that was sort of announced slash shown at PAX South this year is the new game by Greybox called Dreadnought. And that's another space shoot 'em up, first person, fly your space plane around shooting people. That seems like a new genre that's picking up pretty heavy now, but we'll discuss that a little later, I guess. You know, as far as PAX goes, I think that was about it. You know, anyone who is in the southern part of the country, you know, look us up next year. Tickets go on sale probably around September. And I suspect we'll be doubling in size next year. And we're right in downtown San Antonio on the Riverwalk at the Gonzales Convention Center. So I think that's all I have for my coverage of PAX South. So back to you, Dwayne.
Well, I do have one question about PAX South. It's really the most important question I could think of. Are the stars at night really big and bright?
I don't know. I'll be perfectly honest with you. When I got to leave, like go outside the convention, it was directly from the convention. We walked by the Alamo to this Mexican biker gay bar that we kind of took over as enforcers. I feel bad for like the normal patrons. And we just drank ourselves stupid because, you know, we were usually working 16-hour days.
Right.
And by then I was on day 5, because I get there quite a bit early for setup. So I couldn't tell you.
Fair enough.
I can say this. The Alamo is a lot smaller in person than you might think. That's all I got to say.
All right. Well, I look forward to getting down there to PAX South, maybe not next year, but in one of the subsequent years. I usually attend PAX East, and that is an amazing show. I know you guys also attend PAX Prime there in Seattle, because that's where you guys are. But yeah, if you have not been to a PAX, and well, now you have no excuse. There's one on either coast, and there's one down south. And if you are even the tiniest smidge of a gamer, you owe it to yourself to try and attend at least once. It is an experience par excellence.
Yeah, I think I'm at a point now where if you haven't attended a PAX, I'm not going to consider you a real gamer.
Oh,
you're just like a bro dude who happens to play games.
Oh, that's not right, man.
It's true.
All right, and Joe, how about you? What's your story of the week?
Oh, well, I was going to talk about something that I've been seeing. It's been pretty popular on like Twitch, and some people are playing it on MLG.com. That's another one of the popular streaming websites these days. A game called H1Z1. It's actually a...
Sounds like the bird flu.
Yeah.
H1N. Is not the one by Sony, because Sony's doing a zombie game too, right?
I'm not sure. I haven't heard about it. I don't think it's the one by Sony.
Probably not if it's going to be on Steam.
No. Yeah, it's on Steam. It's early access right now. Which, you know, half of everything on Steam is early access these days, but
turns out you're both right. H1Z1 is being developed and published by Sony Online Entertainment.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. That's something I wasn't prepared on. But so I've been seeing it a lot on, you know, Twitch and MLG, and it's a lot like DayZ in the sense of, you know, it's kind of a zombie survival. You have to scavenge for things, so it's a lot like DayZ meets Rust, I guess, a little bit. And I'm watching these guys play, and I notice one of the biggest things is there isn't really a whole lot of people who are friendly, I guess is the best way to put it. I saw this one person get lured in multiple times by people saying, "Yeah, don't worry, we'll help you out. You're starving to death. Okay, just come up here and drop your weapon." And then they shoot him in the head as soon as he gets up there with his hands up. Now, go ahead.
No, I'll save my question till later.
Okay. So one of the problems that I have with the game is the microtransactions. Now, I don't really have a problem with microtransactions in general, but I saw this one guy. He called in. What you can do is you can call in an airdrop. And you either get it for ordering like a collector's edition sort of thing, and they'll give you a few of them, or you can pay for them. And an airplane will fly by and drop a big crate for you. The issue, though, that everybody in the entire game can hear this this airplane coming by, and the second you get there, three other people show up with guns and kill you. So you can't actually get that loot unless you're already geared out, kind of reducing the purpose of having these crates. So these people with the guns already now get to claim your loot crate that you've paid actual money for. And I just think it's kind of...
So it's pretty much the haves always get and the have-nots are screwed.
Correct.
You know, I mean, the real important question about H1Z1 is, can you handcuff someone, steal their pants, force feed them canned beans? Because that really seems to be the thing.
No.
Wasn't that in Rust?
No,
that wasn't DayZ.
Yeah, it's a DayZ thing.
No,
and then you shoot them anyways.
As far as I've seen, you cannot actually interact with somebody else's character in H1Z1 besides shooting them. And you don't take a lot of damage before you just die. If you get shot once, you're pretty much screwed. Like, if somebody has a gun, then you're dead. If you do not have a gun to defend yourself with, then you're dead. Hmm. Unless you're a very good shot with a bow and arrow, which is actually a fairly easy weapon to come by early on. You just have to collect some sticks and some feathers and make your bow and arrow.
Interesting. So, but it's a permanent world, right? So it's like an MMO, correct?
Yeah, there's multiple servers that you can play on. The queues are pretty high right now. Lots of people are playing it. I did a quick search on Twitch, and there's hundreds upon hundreds of people playing this game right now. And, you know, the top 10 of them have thousands of people watching them. So I don't know, it just seems like the new game to play and stream right now. It just seemed interesting, I guess.
Yeah, well, if I'm correct, it's only $20, right, on Steam. So that makes it $10 or $20 cheaper than DayZ.
Yeah, well, there was the DayZ mod, which people still consider better than the DayZ standalone because they had a lot more. There's a lot more that you could do in the standalone. I mean, in the modded, not the standalone.
Right. Interesting. So zombies are coming back. I still want another Left 4 Dead, to be honest with you.
Coming back? Zombies never left.
I think they kind of went on a hiatus for a while. Like, they all took a cruise ship and went out to sea and partied and did whatever zombies do at night.
Zombie cruise crazy?
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. They went tanning. And it seemed like the zombie craze kind of died off for a little bit. And now it feels like with DayZ and that kind of stuff coming back, it's getting a little hot and heavy again. That could just be my perception of what I follow.
Yeah, there's been a lot of zombie stuff. I think it's kind of being overdone lately. But that's just my opinion.
I don't know. To me, the only true zombie game is Plants vs. Zombies. But say what you will about that. My story of the week is actually kind of a negative note. It's a bit of a rumor, and if it's true, it's very sad. There's been a rumor going around, as spread on Recode.com, that AOL is planning to shut down Joystick, the video game journalist site. Joystick has a long and storied history of great online journalism for video games and the gaming community, and AOL seems to want to close down their online properties that aren't bringing in the dough. This is kind of sucks, because if you look at all of AOL's other properties that they're keeping open, places like Engadget, or rather the new Engadget, because the original Engadget was awesome, and the Huffington Post, it seems as though linkbait and clickbait is being rewarded, and actual investigative journalism and good writing and dry humor is being cut from the vine. So what do you guys think about us losing good journalism from the game industry?
I mean, I don't know. It feels like the journalism has been dying off for a while now, right? I mean, what was the big conglomerate that merged like 5 years ago? Damn, now it's completely escaping me. There's another one of these big magazine conglomerates that kind of, you know, melted down a few years ago. I think this is just, you know, to me, it seems like the dissemination of information. I don't think that these single news sources kind of hold all the keys like they used to. I think that, you know, information on places like Reddit and that kind of crap, you know, information moves a lot faster. You don't need these things like what we're doing right now, I guess, to wrap up all the news and give it to you.
Well, possibly, but I do think that dedicated journalist sites serve a very important purpose. You mentioned Reddit, and Reddit has a velocity that you simply cannot match on any other video game news site, because it aggregates from a whole bunch of different sources. Someone has to publish a thing in order for it to hit Reddit and be seen by those millions of people, and that's the function that these news sites provide. Also, because of that high velocity, anything that usually hits Reddit tends to be a very shallow overview of what's going on. Any sort of investigative journalism, any sort of, you know, deep profiling of a particular developer or a publishing house or a problem within the gaming community or within the gaming industry can only be covered by those who have the budget and the time to set one, two, maybe three people off on a wild goose chase to find what they can find. And if the organizations that keep doing this keep getting shut down, then all of games journalism is just going to look like Reddit. And I think, I mean, that's okay for some people, but I think we'll have lost something really nice if that comes to pass.
Yeah, I think what we'll lose is the proper use of the English language.
Well, that too.
I mean, I think there's value to, you know, writers and all that kind of stuff, but I think companies are starting to do a lot of their own publishing of news these days. And it's a lot of times all these writers do is take some of that and just put their own spin on it.
Right, regurgitating press releases.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's getting harder and harder for those sites to do that because of places like Reddit where people can get information directly and, you know, read 12,000 comments. I mean, granted, most of them are, you know, dick butt comments and things like that. But, you know, I just think it's getting harder and harder for these news sites to monetize news.
Right.
Well, a lot of the times that I'll look at some of these sites, I haven't actually visited the Joystick, you know, their branches or anything a lot lately. But when I'm trying to find news on something, I tend to find the same exact article, almost like it's been copy-pasted all over the internet. And it's sometimes difficult to find the source of where the information is coming from. But then again, you know, it's all, I'm doing like a Google search trying to find information on, you know, when Mass Effect 4 is going to come out or something like that.
Which is not soon enough. I'm hoping for some sort of announcement at PAX East in 36 days, but we'll see what happens.
Here's hoping. Yeah. And speaking of Mass Effect, since we're done with our stories of the week, we can go on to our main topic for today, and that is space games.
Space. Nerds in space.
When are we not in space? Just
I don't know.
Yeah. Yes,
I
am. Well, it seems as though since 2014 into the present day and into the foreseeable future, given the release schedules, space games are making a comeback. And we're not just talking about, you know, other genres of games set in space. I mean, you look at Halo. Halo is a shooter, but it's set in space. But it's not a space game. But true space games, where you either hop into a ship and zoom around the galaxy, or you are a ship zooming around the galaxy. You're actually exploring, you're trading, you're pew-pewing against bad guys, or, depending on the game, good guys. What is driving this resurgence of the space game genre, and is the industry taking a break from fantasy?
Well, I think that's an amazing question. You know, fantasy for me has been kind of dwindling in my interest. It's been harder and harder to keep my focus on fantasy games. You know, I mean, I like Dragon Age. Don't get me wrong. I play Dragon Age and, you know, and I enjoy my time in Dragon Age, but, you know, it doesn't stop me from feeling like I'm ready for something different. Joe, sorry, I kind of cut you off there.
Oh, that's fine. I feel the exact same way. I feel like there's been a lot of fantasy games coming out over the past, you know, 10 years. When did World of Warcraft come out, for example?
10
years. It kind of feels like a lot of the MMOs that come out, a lot of the games that come out tend to focus on sword and board kind of castles and, you know, mystical creatures. But like lately I've been wanting to see a lot more, you know, exploring the galaxy, exploring, you know, the unknown, what's out there, instead of focusing on, you know, the past kind of technology.
It does kind of make you wonder if, you know, because Eve Online, which, you know, is the my like 800-pound gorilla, because it's the game I've always wanted to love but could never find the right space to love it. You know, they're going on 10 years. They're more than 10 years now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they got started a year before WoW.
So did it take them 11 years to get it right? Now all of a sudden everyone else is figuring out that, hey, this is actually, you know, something real? Or is it just everyone else ran out of ideas and Eve seems to have been doing their own thing for 10 years and been successful at it? You know, there's a lot of interesting implications around this new resurgence. Because I don't think we've seen this kind of, you know, first-person space shooter since the Wing Commander Privateer days. At least not that I can think of.
Right, which is going on 25 years ago at this point.
Oh, shut up.
Sorry. It's the truth, man. We're getting there. One thing that I've been thinking about along this topic is how much of this is, you know, the air being sucked out of the room in the fantasy space and in the present day, like modern warfare kind of space. I think between your Call of Duty and other modern day shooters and your World of Warcraft basically eating up the entire fantasy genre, you know, I'm wondering if these studios and these publishers are thinking, well, if we make another fantasy-based game, no matter how good our ideas are, it's just going to end up getting co-opted by Blizzard in one of their upcoming expansions or something, and everything that makes us unique and compelling will just be rolled into WoW and steal all of our oxygen before we've even had a chance to breathe. You know, I think space is an open and fertile genre because there isn't this, as you say, Todd, this 800-pound gorilla in the room dominating everything.
Well, I think that, you know, it's going to be interesting. I look at games like Elite Dangerous, and I really like the first-person part of it, and I like the way that they designed it around the Oculus, and the videos I've seen with the head tracking looks like it works really well, and I'd like to try it. But it feels like it's missing everything else. Like, there's nothing – like, I don't watch videos of Elite Dangerous and get goosebumps like I do when I watch a large-scale battle in EVE. And it really, you know, gives me this feeling like, wow, this is epic and this is awesome. Mm-hmm. And you know, EVE has spent 11 years building that whole player base, you know, regional warfare, all this kind of stuff. And I think that these games coming out now have a long way to catch up, you know. But it depends. If their intention is to make it so that the game is you can jump on for 15 minutes, you know, pew-pew a little bit and then, you know, go off and do something else, then, you know, that's fine. That's not what EVE is. Right. You know, if you're not willing to commit 2 hours to playing EVE, just hang it up and go home, you know. At least that's my opinion of the game.
There's some other upcoming space games. Of course, the big one, the one that everyone is aware of, and if you're not aware of it, welcome to 2015, is Star Citizen. That's the spiritual successor to Privateer from Chris Roberts, the creator of Wing Commander. It's not out yet, although the Arena Commander module, the PvP module, if you will, is out for those who have backed the project. This project is immense in scope and is probably not going to be done for quite some time, but it is the paragon of everything about 1990s era space games that people have wanted and has been missing from the industry for the past 25 or so years.
Yeah, and to me, I think that Star Citizen is what's driving this space thing right now, because everyone saw how well they did in their Kickstarter and how well they're continuing to do, you know, because they're still selling ships. I mean, that's how they're funding the project.
Right.
But they're still years from coming out. Star Citizen, I haven't bought into yet. I'm still a little leery about whether or not they can possibly meet the demands or the things that they've promised. I don't know. It's a tough sell, in my opinion.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
I was following Star Citizen a lot when it was first announced. I haven't followed it as much as I wanted to lately, but a lot of their ideas, like ever-expanding galaxies and planets that you can visit and, you know, piracy of other people's ships and insurance on your ships and, you know, being able to multiple man, you know, you can have multiple people manning a spaceship. You know, there's some that...
That's the thing. That's the one thing it's got going for it that keeps me paying attention to it.
Oh, it's the possibility of being a gunner as opposed to a pilot or a technician or an engineer, what have you?
See, to me, a capital ship shouldn't be flown by one person.
Right. I think the largest ship that players can fly is a like 3 or 4 man vessel. I'm not sure what class of vessel it is. Like the two of you, I have not yet bought in to Star Citizen, so I don't have all of my details on it completely down. I'm sure someone will correct us, but yeah, right now I think it's you're limited to a 4 or 5 person ship.
And I think that that ship right now is selling for like $2,000, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So
yeah, the prices. You'll be able to build these ships when you're in the game, and you know, all with in-game currency, you'll be able to achieve everything. But if you want to buy into the high-end ships immediately into the game, then it'll cost you.
Yeah, it's pretty pricey.
I'm not even sure it's on their website anymore, to be honest with you. I'm looking now, and I don't.
Oh, it may have been a limited availability sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't see it. Oh wait, nope, I didn't click the view all ships button. Let's see, they range anywhere from like $15 up to, I don't know, thousands.
Goodness.
Yeah. We can go on. I'll dig through this a little more.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and put a link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, I think this is something like we'll probably be covering a lot over the next. Oh, so sorry. Let me jump in real quick, Joe, because I just found what I was looking for. So the smallest ship you can get with multiple crew is a transport, and it's $200. There's another transport with a 5-man crew that's $250. And here is a long range bomber with an 8-man crew.
Oh, wow.
For $275. And I'm just looking at this. It says max crew / human 8. So I'm assuming that means 8 people fly this thing.
Damn.
It's kind of neat looking. They're doing a really great job on the art. I have to give them credit that. I understand why people are so into this. I mean, I get it.
It's very pretty.
I've been watching Scott Manley on YouTube fly in Star Citizen from time to time as they release new stuff, and everything looks amazing. It's just I kind of need them to tie everything together into one cohesive game, kind of in the way that they've done with Elite, you know, where you've can switch out the ships, you can go explore, you can shoot at other people, you can have other people shoot at you, you can do your trading, and so on and so forth. And right now, they're promising all of that to Star Citizen, but they're not there yet. And I'm really looking forward to them getting to that point.
Yeah, I think that, you know, like what Elite Dangerous needs is the concept of sovereignty, where people own space, because I think that drives warfare. It drives private warfare.
Right.
But then there has to be a reason to own space, you know, and in EVE, it's space stations and resources and things like that. And that's why that all works so well. So I think that there's still a lot of work to be done in the current offerings.
Right. Moving aside from current offerings, we can talk about some stuff that's upcoming. No Man's Sky for the PS4. Is another space game that promises a vast procedurally generated galaxy, and everything I've seen from this game, from the art to the videos to the music, it all looks amazing. But there's just this big question mark about the gameplay. We've seen gameplay video, but being such a early announced title without actually being able to be put in anybody's hands, there's a lot we don't know about No Man's Sky. It's exciting, but you can only get so excited about something you can't touch.
Yeah, that's actually the game I wanted to talk about next. It looks very, very ambitious. From the screenshots that I'm looking at, you know, it shows different planets, it shows space, it shows, you know, multiple ships in what looks to be hyperspace or something, like multiple ships moving through space, and all these different landscapes, all these different animals on the planets, and these beautiful, you know, there's a giant moon in the background, and I mean, I've only very recently heard about this game, so I'm not 100% sure. I haven't seen any actual gameplay footage, so you'll have to kind of fill me in on that. But the game looks very pretty. I mean, it looks like something that I would definitely want to sit down and play.
You know, I'm looking at this and I'm watching some footage right now, as I'd never heard of it before Duane put it in the show notes. This looks like space shooters for bro dudes. I think that the games like Elite Dangerous and Dreadnought, that we'll talk about in a minute, that kind of thing, are going to really be the ones that are going to take the serious flight sim guys, because it has all this hardware support for all this cool stuff. You know, this looks a little, I don't want to say dumbed down, I don't know that that's the right term, but it's definitely a little more simplistic than some of the other games, at least from what I can see in a very short amount of time I researched it.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with what we know about No Man's Sky, is that we know it'll be a vast universe. We know there's going to be a lot of exploration, both in space and on the ground. We know that there's going to be some sort of overarching story and an incentive to explore. But aside from that, matters as far as mechanics, trading, acquiring new ships, and so on and so forth. Those are a lot of question marks that the developer has left unanswered. I know they're still working on the game, and hopefully those answers will be forthcoming soon. But No Man's Sky is one really exciting question mark, and that's pretty much all I can say about it. You mentioned Dreadnought. Now, Dreadnought is an upcoming class-based space shooter coming from Greybox, the developers of the recently released Grey Goo. I read an article on Polygon about it yesterday, about how Dreadnought basically takes the Team Fortress 2 formula, puts it in space, and slows it way the hell down, which is really compelling to someone who doesn't have Twitch reflexes anymore like me.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, they had a booth at PAX, and it was swarmed, and I couldn't get anywhere near it. So I kind of had to watch from a distance. I didn't get to see a lot of detail about it. And so I don't really have a lot of comments about it, because it's fairly newly released or fairly newly announced, right? I mean, I don't remember hearing about it.
Yeah, there was a trailer for it that looked really amazing sometime last fall. But it was all a CG rendered trailer with no gameplay. So it was an interesting bit of story and art, but it wasn't until PAX South that we really started to see any actual gameplay footage for it.
Yeah, there's a couple, I'm not sure what videos there are. Maybe we'll link them in the show notes if we can find something other than just the CG trailer. But this is definitely one to keep an eye on, because this may be the kind of game you can jump in, play for 30 minutes, jump out. You know, it's hard to say.
It kind of, to me, looks like from just the screenshots, it looks a lot like, what's that tank game that
World
was
of Tanks.
Popular? For World, yeah, it kind of looks like a better World of Tanks, but set with spaceships instead of tanks.
Does World of Tanks have different classes?
Yes.
Okay. Then that's definitely a possibility. The the video that I saw that Polygon produced had the titular Dreadnought, which was a massive ship with huge broadside cannons, but doesn't move very fast at all. And they had fighters, they had medic ships that basically repaired other ships, and you had sniper ships, which were really, really fast, but not very nimble and could not defend themselves at close range. And it looked really, really cool. Like I said, a video game version of Team Fortress 2, which we all spent way too many hours in back when the Orange Box first dropped.
I still play Team Fortress 2. It's like one of my stress relievers, or not sometimes.
Well, you just need to play some music really loud in the background and not care about your kill-to-death ratio. And then it's fun, and you actually start doing good.
Well, yeah, because the music makes you feel epic, whether you suck or not, so...
Right.
We had fun whipping up on people in the BYOC room at PAX South. That was kind of fun. Enforcers versus people, and they lost.
I like how you say enforcers versus people. Enforcers because enforers aren't people. They're enforcers.
They're kind of robots. Trust me, if you see how hard they work behind the scenes, they're robots. I mean, we're overpaid. Oh, wow. That's a Freudian slip if I ever had one.
Overpaid, huh?
Underpaid, forced labor.
I did force one year. That was definitely...
Wow, if any other enforcer hears that, I'm going to get a slap.
Yeah, but you guys do it for the love.
We do it for the love. Yes, we'll go with that.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps up our talk on space games. I'm looking forward to pretty much every single game we've mentioned. I already own a copy of Elite Dangerous. I have not had any time to actually fire it up and play it. I'm hoping to do so tonight if I get the chance. We'll go ahead and throw some stuff in the show notes about all of these games. And you'll be able to find those show notes at hammergaming.com/hammercast/1 for episode 1. So let's talk about what we've been playing lately, guys. Todd, what are you playing?
Do you have time to play games? let's see. What have I been playing? Dragon Age. I have my fabulously gay character in Dragon Age. He's wonderful. I have been playing a little Minecraft, although not too much. And World of Warcraft with you fools.
All right.
You fool.
Yep.
Fly, you fools. What about you, Joe?
Pretty much the same. I've been playing a lot of World of Warcraft. I started leveling one of my alts again. Dragon Age, I think I'm a little further, so I slowed down recently. But I was going too fast through the main story, so I started, you know, clearing up all the side quest stuff. And I've been watching a lot of... There's a new Binding of Isaac game that came out that looks very polished from the original one, if you've ever seen the original one.
Yeah.
That's getting pretty popular on YouTube. A lot of people have either, you know, dabbed into it and posted a couple of videos of it, or they're just going all out. Somebody with over 300 videos already that I've seen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of video. Lately, I've been playing a lot of World of Warcraft, just like you folks, because we are all in the same guild together. And I've also been playing a bit of Super Mega Baseball on the PlayStation 4. Which is a baseball sim and baseball arcade game hybrid. It looks wacky, but I swear it plays like the best baseball game I've played since the NES days. And I've also been firing up my ancient Xbox 360 and playing through Bayonetta again, because I had the urge for, you know, high heel pistols and lots and lots and lots of brutality against angels. It's a stress reliever.
I saw you streaming the baseball game.
Yes.
It looked interesting. It wasn't as bad as I was expecting based on the title.
Yeah, Super Mega Baseball doesn't exactly evoke any images of baseball grandness, but rest assured, it is a very, very fun game to play. I've been playing it on and off by myself, with my wife, with my 10-year-old son, and we've all been enjoying the hell out of it. So, now that we know what we've all been playing this week, let's move on to the Colosseum. We're going to go ahead and throw a whole bunch of news stories into the Colosseum, and we're going to play the Emperors. As I let us know about each individual story, we're going to give it a brief thumbs up, thumbs down, and an explanation why. And keep in mind that neutral is also an option, but the crowd really likes an up or a down. So first off, in the Colosseum this week, Blizzard is letting players buy into Heroes of the Storm. A $40 Founders Pack grants gold, hero unlocks, skins, and instant access to the closed beta of Blizzard's in-development MOBA. Joe, how do we feel about this?
I mean, I'd just give it a thumbs up, but if people want to spend... People tend to like that. People tend to want to buy in and get special treatment in-game, as you would say. As you could say, you get special stuff. It makes you feel good about yourself, I think.
All right.
It's a good idea.
Emperor Todd?
I give it a thumbs down. I am so over the MOBA space. All those people can go die in a fire.
That's ouch. Okay. Tell us how you really feel there, Todd.
I mean, as far as MOBAs go, I'm not a huge fan of MOBAs, but the idea of, you know, a Founders Pack for the people that are into that is what my thumbs up was.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care about people paying to get into access a beta. I mean, that's what Steam's been doing now for the last year. That's no different.
It's what we all did with Minecraft.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
All right. The next story, Steam Broadcasting goes live. Valve's answer to Twitch's dominance of live streaming video games debuted this month in the Steam client. Todd, thumbs up or thumbs down?
If it works, I give it a thumbs up. Anything to challenge Twitch.
Joe?
Thumbs up, though I don't think it's going to challenge Twitch because it's only people on your friends list who can actually view your games as far as I've read. It's more of a you can view your friends playing a game and not so much thousands of people can find your video and watch you.
So there's no publicly available streams?
Not that I've seen, though I could be wrong and somebody will probably correct me.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and give it a thumbs up as well. Just because anything that challenges Amazon/Twitch is a net good thing. We need competition in this space to drive everyone in it to provide better services. So story number three, Evolve has a release date, February 10th, 2015. 2K Games' asymmetrical team-based shooter Evolve has been very hotly anticipated, and now it's less than 2 weeks away. Joe, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs up. It looks like a really great game. I've been watching a lot of people play it. Very creative design. You play as a monster while your friends try to kill you.
Because getting killed by my friends always sounds like a great time. Emperor Todd.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a thumbs up. I've heard great things. And really, when you get to kill your friends, any game is good.
Yeah, I have to go thumbs up on this as well. Not just because of the killing friends angle on it, which is very compelling, but I really love the idea of asymmetrical matchups. You know, we kind of had that going on with Left 4 Dead, but the asymmetry was usually in favor of the AI, and the idea of putting a human player behind it is just so awesome. I cannot wait to try this game. Our next story, Microsoft is going to make Windows 10 upgrades available for free to Windows 7 and Windows 8.1 users for up to 1 year after release. Emperor Todd, yay or nay?
About frickin' time. Thumbs up.
Emperor Joe?
I'm going to give it a thumbs down because I hate free stuff.
Yeah, that's it.
So I'm going to go ahead and put you down for a thumbs up on that. I'm going to go ahead and give this a neutral for now. I am definitely trending thumbs up. I simply don't know enough about Windows 10 to know if it's going to be a compelling upgrade. I know Microsoft kind of fell flat on its face with PC gamers when it came to Windows 8 and Windows 8.1. They've been making improvements. Windows 8.1 is here on my wife's gaming computer, and she makes do with it, but I have caught her looking over at my Windows 7 machine somewhat longingly from time to time. So I know Microsoft has made some missteps, and it's going to take more than what they've shown already to get me to buy into their vision for the next version of Windows. But hey, it's free. I'll probably end up taking it anyway. Our next story, Madden NFL 15 has predicted that the Patriots will defeat your Seahawks in Super Bowl 49, 28-24. Emperor Todd?
Well, you know, it's interesting because you're from New England. Oh, actually, we're all from New England, but now Joe and I live in Seattle where the Seahawks are. So this is an interesting discussion. You know, I mean, the Seahawks have better uniforms. They're going to win because everyone likes them better. I think if Wilson can get off his ass in the first half, we'll do fine. Otherwise, it'll probably be more of a landslide than 28-24.
All right. Emperor Joe?
Well, thumbs up, thumbs down. I don't really know. I know I like the Seahawks uniforms better. I don't really follow. I don't really know anybody on the different teams. So all I know is the Madden NFL part of it, and I think that they just don't want to see the same thing year after year like they've been putting out. And I think the Seahawks are going to win again.
All right, that's fair. You guys are like my sister-in-law. you draft people for your fantasy football team based on how they look and not how they play.
Did that with my fantasy hockey team a few years ago.
How'd you do?
They didn't do bad.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and go neutral on this. I don't really have a personal stake in it. It's always nice when the Patriots win something because everybody here in the neighborhood is much happier for like the next week and people are actually nice. But less bar fights, etc. But I'm going to stay neutral on this one because I'm more of a hockey guy than a football guy, and this could go either way, and no skin off my nose. Last story for the Coliseum this week, Graybox's modern retro RTS Grey Goo launched last week to much fanfare. Todd, you got to see a little bit of it at PAX South. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Well, it's a thumbs up for me. You know, it's kind of like a fast-paced, StarCraft-ish type of game, you know, not really a base builder as much from what I can tell. It's on my wish list.
And Emperor Joe?
I'm going to have to just go neutral because I don't know much about it. This is when we started talking about it today is the first I've really heard about it.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and give it a thumbs up. I watched Total Biscuit play a little bit of this week, and it looks really neat. It's not quite as twitchy as StarCraft II and a lot of other modern RTSs and the MOBAs that descended from them. It seems a bit more methodical, a bit more planned. I'm pretty sure that you can't mount a static defense in it the way you could in older RTSs, but it brings a whole bunch of older RTS ideas into a modern game, which I think is a very, very cool thing to do. And with that, I think we're pretty much done today, guys. Is there anything else we want to cover?
No, that's all for me.
And how about you, Joe?
That's about it. I'm a little bit disappointed with your lack of being able to spell Coliseum, but that's about it.
Well, you know, we'll correct it before the show notes go live. All right, well, thank you very much for listening this week. Hammercast is brought to you by the Hammer Gaming Community. The Hammer Gaming Community is a group of common-minded adult gamers that span a vast array of games, video games, tabletop games, and otherwise. We play Minecraft, Civ, World of Warcraft, and everything in between. For more information, head over to hammergaming.com, and we'll see you next week.